I want to take a thought that seemed like we felt kind of inspired with Wednesday night about preparation or being prepared. I'd like to take that, look at it a little closer. Not so much being prepared as what it takes to be prepared. we think, well, to prepare, that means to get all the ingredients together to maybe make a meal. We on our out of town Saturday and yesterday, and on the way home, my wife said, we need to stop. I need to get a few things. So we stopped, and she came out with a basket with several sacks in it. She was getting some things to for preparation, and we, of course, when we get home, we have to take those things in the house. And sure enough, she took those things that she had and that she bought, and the things that she had at the house, and put them all together, and has made something most of us would call a casserole. So the casserole is prepared for someone else, for them to have something to eat. But the preparation of the casserole took several different things to make it. You don't make a casserole out of just cheese or just meat or just maybe rice or something like that. There's got to be some other things involved, maybe some broccoli. I don't know. What did you put in it? I don't remember. Oh, it's a breakfast casserole. So anyway, so she put several things in this to prepare something for a future meal for others, you see. So this morning, I'd like for us to talk about one of those ingredients of being prepared spiritually. We'd like to be prepared spiritually, as several expressed that desire on Wednesday night, to be prepared to be able to minister or to help to someone that has a need in their life. We have lots of people around us in this world that have needs. Some of them are have addictions. Some people have emotional wreckage in their life, and other people have maybe physical injury or other hurts and needs in their life. And to be able to minister to other people's needs, we need to have some preparation, be prepared. We need to have some casseroles that we can feed them. You know, I like most all the ingredients that go in the casserole, but I like the casserole even better. So one of the things I want to talk about this morning is something that I would call discipline. Discipline not in that the retribution for misbehavior, that's not what I'm talking about, but I'm talking about discipline as far as a way of life. I'll read you a dictionary definition that I found. It says to instruct or educate, to inform the mind, to prepare by instructing in correct principles and habits, as to discipline youth for profession or for future usefulness. So discipline is an ingredient to being prepared for some kind of future usefulness. We want to be prepared in the future. There's going to be somebody that comes in your life that has some real serious needs, and we need to have a casserole ready. We can, you got something that's maybe not baked, it may be all prepared and in the freezer, and you can slide that out of the freezer and have the oven warmed up and put a casserole in, and just a little bit, you've got something tasty to eat. And we want to be able to have some spiritual, emotional, comforting casseroles. We need to have some instructional casserole, something that is the type of food that people need around us. It's going to take some discipline. It's going to take some learning correct principles and habits. So I wanted to think about that. Instructing in correct principles and habits. I'd like to turn to 1 Corinthians 9th chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and read a few verses here. Apostle Paul speaking. He says here, beginning in verse 25, "And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible." We know that anybody that becomes proficient at anything in this old world has begun to develop a routine, a discipline. They have things that they just don't do, or things that they always do. And they're doing this for the reward that they would get in this life. We know people that, I'm sure we do, I've been acquainted with people that are very conscientious about what they eat, for maybe a health reason in particular. Maybe they won't eat certain foods because they know it will agitate a condition that they have in their body. We know people that, we've got some people even out there in the country that come jogging by my house. Why are they doing this? And they'll be out there when the weather is not so nice and not so pleasant. And they're doing this. This is a routine. It's a habit. And they're doing it for a specific reason. You know, it takes some concessions, or it takes some, here he uses the word temperate. There's some other things you have to lay aside when you're focusing on that. And you know, we've all probably listened to the radio and heard somebody on there talking about financial things. And there's this one fella in particular, some of us here, that he really advocates people getting out of debt and wanting you to discipline and be intemperate and adjust your spending habits and your earnings and all of this to where you can get out of debt, so you don't have any more credit card debt and you don't have a house note and you don't have car payments. And he wants, and people will call in and give him their particular situation, and he'll give them some advice a lot of times. But they're doing it for a temporal thing, you see. And for us, it says here, they that which run in a race run all, okay? And then we read the verse, "And every man that striveth for mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible." We are not just trying to get out of debt monetarily. We're not just trying to get in shape physically. And we're not just trying to adjust our appetite. So because we want to be healthy, we want to get something under control in our body. There's another discipline that we're trying to adhere to. I'm not saying that it's wrong to be out of debt. I think that's a very admirable thing. I think it's a good thing to be physically active and in shape. And I think it's a good thing to adjust our diet so that we don't have physical problems. All of those are advantageous to us. They're admirable things to do. But we're here in church this morning, and our purpose is that we would have a discipline that would be profitable to us spiritually. And notice the next verse. He says, "I therefore so run," Apostle Paul speaking, "not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air." I'm not doing this in a haphazard manner. It's not something that I just try a little bit and give up, but I'm developing a discipline. And notice the last verse. But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. Did you know that if you're going to get up and run a mile or 2 miles every day, that keeps your body under subjection? You know, not everybody just feels inspired to get up and run a mile every morning. In fact, I would venture to say that even people that do run a mile every morning would have mornings that they really don't want to. But they've got started on something and they have determined, I'm going to run a mile every morning, or I'm not going to eat any more chocolate, or I'm not going to eat any more of whatever because it impacts my body in a wrong way. I'm not going to spend any more money for Cheetos or whatever it is. I'm going to save my money because I'm determined to get out of debt. Even though you may not want to run, even though you may have a craving for Cheetos or whatever it is, you are disciplining yourself for another reason. And here this writer is telling us, I keep under my body, bring it into subjection, lest by any means when I have done what? Preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Now, if you heard this talk show guy that gives all the financial advice, if you found out that he was bankrupt and that he was in debt so high that he could not afford to pay himself out, you'd be very disappointed in him, wouldn't you? And aren't all of us disappointed in someone that has been a spiritual leader amongst us and then they take a different path? They allow things to over. It takes discipline, folks. You're not going to be able to be prepared spiritually without discipline in our lives. So I'd like to turn to Hebrews 11th chapter and notice another passage that I feel like implies discipline. In the 11th chapter of Hebrews, we have a lot of people here that are named out as being faithful in the Scripture. And I'd like to look beginning in verse 24. He says, by faith, Moses, when he came to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Now, a discipline is a choice. A discipline is not, we're not talking about getting caught red-handed stealing cookies from the cookie jar and your mother taking you back to the woodshed, so to speak. That's not the discipline we're talking about. We're talking about discipline that you and I choose to have in our lives. A discipline here, he says, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. And here's the secret behind why people choose to discipline themselves. There's a reward at the end. He said here that he would rather, he esteemed the reproach of Christ or of being a follower of God greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. So today we have a choice. We can either discipline ourselves or not have any discipline. Did you know that people without discipline have more trouble than people with disciplines? You just think about that a minute. If you have no discipline, you know it's going to be hard for you to have friends? Because you just say whatever pops into your head. And you don't think about, you don't have any kind of parameters of thinking about how it might be injurious to someone else. Did you know it's going to be hard if you have no discipline to hold a job? I mean, a lot of times I didn't feel like going to work, especially Monday morning. You know, Monday morning is a time that if just about when my alarm goes off, that's when it seems like I am really sleeping good. And, you know, if I didn't have a discipline in my life, I wouldn't get up and go to work. It'd be tough for me to hold a job, even though I'm working for my son, so to speak. I think he'd get tired of it. He'd probably tell me, "Dad, you know, if you can't show up, I got to get somebody that'll be here." So it's going to be hard for us to really achieve the reward that we want if we don't have discipline in our life. And he says here that Moses recognized that there was a recompense of reward. There is something coming at the end if I don't discipline myself. And Moses chose to be classified as an Israelite, that at the time he chose it, they were slaves. They were slaves to the Egyptians. And he chose rather to be a slave than to be a ruler of the slaves. And he was one of the... he was in a very unique situation. But you know, today we're in a unique situation. And it's up to us whether we choose to be a slave to sin or whether we choose to be free. But he chose to be a slave in the literal sense because he wanted to be free in the spiritual sense. And today, we could be a slave to sin, couldn't we? But the Lord wants us to be free. But we won't be free. We won't be free from sin in ourselves if we don't have discipline. And we won't have, we won't be prepared to be able to serve that spiritual casserole, so to speak, to somebody that's in need if we don't have discipline in our own life. But it's a choice. It's a choice that we have to make. We have to see the value in discipline. Those people that get up and go jogging in the fog, and those people that get up and do the things that they do, they have a goal. They have an objective. There's a reason that they do this, and they've got their eyes on something more than just getting up and getting going in the morning. All right, let's go to 2 Samuel and notice a passage of Scripture in 2 Samuel, the 23rd chapter. I'll begin reading in verse 13. And in this chapter, we have an account. In verse 8, it talks about the names of the mighty men whom David had. So these are extraordinarily courageous men that had joined themselves with David here. So we'll begin reading in verse 13 maybe. And three of the 30 chief went down and came to David in the harvest time under the cave of Adullam. And the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. Now this sounds like they're fixing to have a battle, right? We're just accounting a something that happened here. And David said then in an hold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. So David was in a position where in a hold. This sounds like they were in an adverse circumstance. They weren't just at liberty to do and go where they wanted to. There's an enemy that was going to take advantage of any opportunity they got against them. And David was in this position, and there was a garrison of the Philistines that was in Bethlehem. Now Bethlehem, we know, was known later in the Scripture as the what? City of David. This was his hometown. So David has been displaced, you might say. The enemy was... Now, have you ever had any bad dreams where maybe you woke up and come home and there were strangers in your house and they told you to get out and stuff like that? Have you ever had a bad dream like that? Have you ever wondered what it'd be like to go home and find that who's here? You know, cars in the driveway, and you get up and go to the door, and maybe there's things going on in the house that you wouldn't approve of. And like, who told y'all to come in? Oh, we live here now. Wouldn't that be strange? Now, that's kind of what David was. Bethlehem's where he was from. But the Philistines were there. And he was in a hole. He was kind of, you might say, hid out. And so David, this is a position he was in, and David longed and said, have you ever longed for something? Oh, I remember what it was like. He says he longed, oh, that one would give me a drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. So David, probably feeling frustrated because he was not able to be in his, might say, his hometown, and the enemy was there, and oh my, remember how good the water was over there in that well by the gate. I sure wished I had a drink of it. So here's where the story gets interesting. And said, the three mighty men break through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate and took it and brought it to David. Now you think about this. Now there was a whole garrison. That means there was a bunch of them Philistines over there. I don't know how many there was, but a garrison means they had pretty well established a headquarters over there. There was a bunch of Philistines in Bethlehem. David and at least 30 men were with him. And they were kind of held up somewhere. They was in a hiding place. They were maybe contemplating an attack on the enemy, but they hadn't got there yet. So these three men, three mighty men, they took off. They heard David lamenting about wanting a drink of water from that well. And they took off, went over there to the Philistine garrison, and I don't know, I doubt that they knocked on the door and said, may we come in. That didn't happen that way. In my mind, it says, they break through the host of the Philistines. They were muscling their way through. And they got through to the well, and they got some water. I don't know what kind of container they put it in, but they got water in some type of container, and they took off. Now, the Philistines, I'm sure when they broke through and they only went to the well and got some water and they left, I imagine the Philistines, some of them that had tried to resist them, was wondering, what is wrong with these men? They come, broke through all, hazarded their lives, and they got out with their lives. We got to remember that. And all they got was a glass of water. I don't know if they even brought that much back to David, but they brought some water back to David. And David took it, and they took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, verse 16 here, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord, and said, be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives? Therefore he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men. Now, what do you think about David? Do you think that was disrespectful for him to pour the water out after these guys risked their necks to go get it? Do you understand what he's saying here? This was more than water now to David. This was like the blood of those men that risked their lives. They put their lives in jeopardy to go get this water. Who do I think I am to drink it and smack my lips and say, oh boy, that was good. Who do I think I am? There's no way I'm not worthy to drink this water. Even if he was thirsty, even if he didn't have enough water as it was, he did not, there was a discipline here. What was the discipline? He respected and valued the lives of these men and their courage. And his discipline was that he did not want to elevate himself up to some kind of lofty level or so above. They didn't want people to worship him. He didn't want that. Do you see what the discipline was here? The discipline was not something that was just for selfish gain or something like that. This discipline was something that caused David's character to be much... Do you know those men thought more of David after he poured the water out than before they ever went? Don't you know that? Don't you know that if he had asked them, would you go with me and take that garrison of the Philistines that's over there in Bethlehem? Don't you know they'd been right there with him? But if he had drank it, slurped it all up, not offered any to anybody else and said, y'all done good. You know that they wouldn't have had near as much devotion. But they seen something about David's discipline. When he poured that water out, oh, I'm not worthy to drink. This is like you meant. This is like your blood. I would never drink your blood. I'm not worthy of that. There's a discipline in David's character, you see. There's a discipline about us if we're going to be true to the Lord, if we're going to be prepared, if we're going to have something to share. There's some denying of myself. That's what David did there. Let's back up in 2 Samuel to the 11th chapter and notice here beginning in verse 6. He says, and David sent to Joab saying, send me Uriah the Hittite. And Joab sent Uriah to David. Now, the men of Israel were in battle and David was not with them. And so David had got himself in trouble and had committed adultery with Uriah's wife. We all know that. And she had sent David word that she was going to be expecting a child. So David sent for Joab, sent a messenger to Joab and told him, said, send me Uriah. Tell him to come home. This is the man that was the husband of the woman he had had an affair with. Seventh verse, and when Uriah was come unto him, David demanded of him how Joab did and how the people did and how the war prospered. So David got Uriah there and he said, well, Uriah said, tell me about what's going on up there at the battle. How's the soldiers getting along? Is everybody encouraged? Gaining ground on the battle, you know, or how's things going up there? And I think Uriah probably answered his questions as accurately as he knew how. He was not a dedicated news reporter, but he was just one of the soldiers. He was just one of the men. And so after he had asked him, and when Uriah was come, we know he asked these questions. And David said to Uriah, go down to thy house, wash thy feet. And Uriah departed out of the king's house, and there followed him a mess of meat from the king. Now, the king wanted him to, you just go on home, and we're going to send dinner home with you. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all of the servants of his lord, and went not down to his house. And when they had told David, saying, Uriah went not down into his house, David said unto Uriah, camest thou not from thy journey? Why then didst thou not go down into thy house? Now notice what kind of caliber of man Uriah was. And Uriah said unto David, the ark, that gold-plated ark of the covenant, the ark that God's presence was devoted to, the ark in Israel. The majority of all of the able-bodied men of Israel and Judah abide in tents. The ark doesn't have a permanent residence. And the men of Israel and Judah are abiding in tents. And my Lord Joab, the man that is leader of the army, of the forces, and the servants of my Lord are encamped in open fields. Shall I then go into my house and eat and drink and lie with my wife as thou livest and as thou my soul livest? I will not do this thing. Uriah said, I'm living by a code, a discipline. My fellow man, that I am not any more valuable than the other men that's out there on the battlefront. The other men, the ark, all it's out there engaged in conflict, in combat. There's a cause, there's a purpose, there's a reason. And there's no way I'm going to come home from a confrontation with the enemy and then, you might say, go on vacation right in the midst of that. I respect my fellow man that's out on the battleground too much. I have a discipline that I follow, you see. Those men don't get the same pleasures I would have of going home and being with my wife. With their wives, they didn't have that opportunity. And I'm not going to take it either. And David said to Uriah, tarry here a day also, and tomorrow I will let thee depart. So follow this story. So Uriah abode in Jerusalem that day and the morrow. And when David had called him, he did eat and drink before him and made him drunk. And at even he went out to lie on his bed with the servants of his Lord, but he went not down to his house. Now, I've never been drunk in my life. But I know that people that are drunk don't do things as rationally as they do when they are sober. And David was trying to get Uriah in a position where he could be, you might say, have an excuse that he could get off of the hook, you see. But Uriah, I don't know. Some people have made some pretty rational choices even when they are intoxicated. But there was something going on here. Uriah had a discipline about him. He had something about his character that he would not cross a certain line. And he valued his fellow men that were out there on the battlefront, and he did not go down. Not because he didn't love his wife, not because of any of that. It was because of the discipline that he had in his life. Even when he was drunk, he didn't go down there. Now I'm going to tell you, this was real discipline. How much discipline do we have in our walk with the Lord? How much devotion, how much determination do we have? I will not do something that would violate my integrity with the Lord. But more than that, we're talking about discipline that would prepare us. Did you know it takes discipline to be prepared? It's going to take some real purpose for us. It's pretty common in the age we live in for people to take advantage of other people's shortcomings and other people's take advantage of situations. It's pretty common in our world today. There's not many people that have much discipline in our world that we live in. But Lord, help us to have a discipline about us. I'm not talking about just staying away from sin. I'm talking about a discipline that would help us be prepared. It takes discipline to be punctual with attendance, whether it's at school, whether it's at work, whether it's at church. It takes discipline to be prepared for tests. It takes discipline to be prepared for the objectives of the job. Ever been handed a job that you've never done before and you wonder, now how? How am I ever going to accomplish this? You know, they want me to do what? And immediately, if you don't have discipline, you won't be prepared for that. But we have to have discipline to be able not only to prepare for tests in school, to plan for, to be prepared for objectives that our boss may give us, but we have to be prepared and have discipline to be prepared for ministering in any capacity, whether it's teaching or preaching or singing or witnessing. I've known people in past generations that attended singing school. So they could learn how to sing better. I probably needed to go. You know, learning how to do something, it's one thing to see a need, it's another thing to discipline ourselves to prepare for that need. Don't you see needs around us? There's needs all around in this world. People that have desperate situations in their life, and you think, oh, we ought to be able to help them. Yes, we ought to be able to help them. But how do we be prepared to help others? It's because we cultivate a discipline that enables us to be prepared. All right? Notice Galatians, the 6th chapter and the 9th verse. I just want to help us realize that no matter how pumped up somebody can be about being prepared, you can, maybe because we're getting close to noon and maybe your appetite is really kicking in and you're feeling kind of hungry, maybe you can kind of visualize a nice casserole. And maybe you've got a favorite casserole. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe you'd like to have breakfast casserole for lunch, and maybe you'd like to have some kind of chicken casserole, and maybe you'd like to have something, I don't know. You just think about that casserole. The more you think about some tasty dish that you've been, the closer we get to noon and the hungrier we get, the more you can visualize that. But you know, there won't be no casserole if somebody didn't prepare it. There won't be any casserole if you didn't discipline yourself to get the ingredients to put it all in there. And maybe you put it in the oven and set the timer on the oven so when you get out of church that the casserole is nice and hot and ready. Anybody hungry yet? I want to tell you something about being prepared. I want to tell you something about discipline. You know you're going to get tired. You're going to get tired of discipline. Oh, I got tired of getting spanked when I was a child. But, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about discipline where I am determined to make adjustments in my life that need to be adjusted. You think about the discipline that David had when he said, there's no way I can drink that water. That looks more like the blood of the men that went and got it. I don't believe it was red either. I believe it was clear water. It's more like the discipline of Uriah when he said, there is no way. My co-workers, the ones that I'm shoulder to shoulder with in the confrontation that's going on, there's no way I can go down and enjoy the pleasures of home, of my family, of my spouse. I can't do that when I know they're out there with their neck on the line. I can't do that. Did you know that living by that kind of discipline, you're going to get tired? And you're going to ask yourself the question, what's the use? What good is it doing? How is it ever going to pay the dividends that it should pay? Even if you've got your eye on a goal, you remember Moses had his eye on something, on a reward that was going to come to those that followed the paths of the Egyptians. But his eye was on being pleasing to God. And we can get our eye on being pleasing to God, and I believe we should, and I highly advocate that this morning, but I'm telling you that we have to have a discipline to be prepared to be used of the Lord. I'm telling you that if you put that discipline in place in your life, there's going to be a time that you're going to get weary with that. You're going to get tired. I'm just telling you, there's a realization. Notice what this verse says in Galatians, the 6th chapter and the 9th verse. It's a very common verse. And it says, "And let us not be weary in well-doing." You know, it's the right thing for us to do to have discipline in our life. It's the right thing to do. He says here, "But let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." Do you know why he says, "Let us not be weary"? Because he knows you're going to get weary. He knows you're going to get tired. He knows you're going to feel like giving up. He knows that you're going to feel like, what's the use? Why do I keep struggling? Why do I keep living by this code of honor? Or this discipline, when I look around and I don't see anybody else doing this. You ever felt that way? You get tired of it, don't you? It can be tiresome. But the admonition of the Scripture is, be not weary in well-doing. You cannot allow yourself to get tired. Do you know Uriah, by the time he had got good and drunk, you know that he was tired of probably the discipline that he had vowed himself to? You know how tempting that was? You think about being away from home for a period of time and for a reason. And then you think about coming that close to home and yet not going because you valued your co-workers so much. I think I'd be tired of staying true to that. You're going to be tired, but don't give up. Don't let yourself become weary of doing the right thing. Because of why? Because there's an expected end to this thing. Let's go to one more verse. I want to read Job, a man that lived possibly Abraham's time. Maybe even older. But let's go to Job, the 23rd chapter. Beginning in verse 1. "Then Job answered and said," Job's fixing to give some explanation here. He said, "Even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke is heavier than my groaning." Did you know that Job lived by discipline? You know that he had great discipline in his life. You know, there was a time when, before all the calamities came, that Job even offered sacrifices for his children, peradventure, just in case they were doing something that was displeasing to the Lord. He lived by very high discipline. He says, "Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat, that I might even be able to get close to who?" Who's he talking about? The Lord? God? He said, "I would order my cause before him and fill my mouth with arguments. If I could just get close to the Lord, I'd say, 'Lord, why is all of this trouble coming to me?' I would ask him, 'Can you explain what I did that deserved all of this?'" Job was still living by a great discipline in his own self. He was living by a code of conduct that very few people have adhered to. And he says, "If I could get close to him, I would ask God to help me understand why I'm in such a terrible place." He lost his children, lost all his possessions. His wife turned against him. He's afflicted in his body. He's miserable. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. "And if I could, I could get close to, if I just come to his seat, just up close to his seat, I would try to ask, 'Lord, why is this all happening?'" I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say unto me. Will he plead against me with his great power? No. But he would put strength in me. There the righteous might dispute with him, so I should be delivered forever from my judge. Behold, I go forward, but he's not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand, where he doth work, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, that I cannot see him. He is not able to get close. He doesn't see the Lord anywhere. But listen to the discipline that Job has in his life. He says, but he knoweth the way that I take. He knows the discipline that I have in my heart and in my life. He knows the way that I take, and when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Now, I'm going to tell you, Job was in a place to be prepared. And may the Lord help us today to be in a place where we can be prepared. I'm going to tell you, I get tired of being disciplined. I'm being very honest with you today. I get tired of being disciplined. I get overwhelmed with the thought of trying to be prepared. But I know this. I want to gain the prize. I want to gain the prize. I don't want to come up short. I want to be disciplined in my life. When I think of Moses, and he chose the path of the Israelites instead of an Egyptian, he could have been cracking the whip on the slaves. But instead, he chose the way of Christ. Lord, help me to choose the path of Christ. Help me, because there's an expected end, folks. And not just an end for me, but there's a hurting world around us. And how am I ever going to be able to be prepared to help someone else if I don't have any discipline in my own life? I've got to discipline myself to take the time for the Lord on a daily basis. I've got to do that. I've got to take time to be in a position where I can help. I don't feel like I've ever been a good speaker, but I'm going to tell you, I learned early on in my life, before I ever got out of school, if you're going to be effectual at all in what you say, you're going to have to spend some time preparing. You're going to have to meditate on what you say. You're going to have to try to organize your thoughts. I'm not talking about preparing. I don't prepare speeches. I make some notes, and that's all I do. Lord, help us to prepare and be in a place to have the discipline to where when the need comes along, we'll be able to say, here, I got something for you. You know what? Who was the disciples that went into the temple and the man was crying, begging for alms? The crippled man? And they said, well, we don't have any money to help you out with, but we do have something. In the name of Jesus Christ, get up and walk. You know they couldn't have done that if they weren't prepared. They couldn't have done that if they didn't have discipline in their life. Lord, help us today to have discipline in our lives. And even if we feel like, even if we're tired and we feel like old Job and say, I look all around, I look before me, I look behind me, I look on this side, I look on that side, I don't see the Lord anyway, anywhere. But yet, what did he say? When he's tried me, he knows the way that I take. He knows the discipline in my life. And when he's tried me, I'll come forth as gold. You pray for me.